Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So I'll just chant the verse. Canto 5, chapter 6, text number 18. So you can just listen because it's long meter.
Rajan Patir Guru Alam Bhavatam Yuda Yadunam Daivam Priyakula Pati Kwa Chakinkarova Astvevam Anga Bhagavan Bhajatam Mukundo Muktim Dadati Karhichit Sma Nabhakti Yogam.
Do it one more time.
Rajan Patir Guru Alam Bhavatam Yadunam Daivam Priyakula Pati Kvacha Kinkarova Astvevam Anga Bhagavan Bhajatam Mukundo Muktim Dadati Karhichit Smana Bhakti Yogam.
Translation. Shukadev Goswami continued, "My dear King, the Supreme Person Mukunda is actually the maintainer of all the members of the Pandava and Yadu dynasties. He is your spiritual master, worshipable deity, friend, and the director of your activities. To say nothing of this, he sometimes serves your family as a messenger or servant. This means he worked just as ordinary servants do. Those engaged in getting the Lord's favor attain liberation from the Lord very easily, but he does not very easily give the opportunity to render direct service unto him." Purport by Srila Prabhupada. While instructing Maharaj Parikshit, Shukadev Goswami thought it wise to encourage the king, because the king might be thinking of the glorious position of various royal dynasties. Especially glorious is the dynasty of Priyavrata, in which the Supreme Lord Rishabdev incarnated. Similarly, the family of Uttanapada Maharaj, the father of Maharaj Dhruva, is also glorious due to King Prithu's taking birth in it. The dynasty of Maharaj Raghu is glorified because Lord Ramachandra appeared in that family. As far as the Yadu and Kuru dynasties are concerned, they existed simultaneously. But of the two, the Yadu dynasty was more glorious because of the appearance of Lord Krishna. Maharaj Parikshit might have been thinking that the Kuru dynasty was not so fortunate as the others, because the Supreme Lord did not appear in that family, neither as Krishna, nor Ramachandra, Rishabdev, or Maharaj Prithu. Therefore, Parikshit Maharaj was encouraged by Shukadev Goswami in this particular verse. The Kuru dynasty may be considered more glorious due to the presence of devotees like the five Pandavas, who rendered unalloyed devotional service. although Lord Krishna did not appear in the Kuru dynasty, he was so obliged to the Pandavas' devotional service that he acted as a maintainer of the family and spiritual master of the Pandavas. Although he took birth in the Yadu dynasty, Lord Krishna was more affectionate to the Pandavas. By his actions, Lord Krishna proved that he was more inclined to the Kuru dynasty than the Yadu dynasty. Indeed, Lord Krishna, indebted to the Pandavas' devotional service, sometimes acted as their messenger. He guided them through many dangerous situations. Therefore, Maharaj Parikshit should not have been saddened because Lord Krishna did not appear in his family. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is always inclined toward his pure devotees. And by his action, it is clear that liberation is not very important for the devotees. Lord Krishna easily gives one liberation, but he does not so easily give one the facility to become a devotee. And he quotes the last line of the verse, Muktim dadhati karhichitsma na bhakti yogam. Directly or indirectly, it is proved that bhakti yoga is the basis for the supreme relationship with the Supreme Lord. It is far superior to liberation. For a pure devotee of the Lord, mukti is automatically attained. For those of you that may not have been with us for the previous days discussing these verses from the fifth canto, chapter 6, the chapter heading is the activities of Lord Rishabhdev. Shukadev Goswami is describing his teaching and his activities, and just to refresh, he's described one of the glories of Lord Rishabhdev is that he had no interest in material enjoyment. He had no interest in liberation. He had no interest in mystic siddhis. Therefore, amongst all yogis, he is the superlative yogi. He is the superlative person, just even by worldly standards, as if he was an ordinary living entity like us. He's the best amongst us. But he's not just one of us. He's the Supreme Lord, and that is also described as the Supreme Person. He's the source of everything. And so what does he need something? He doesn't need bhukti, mukti, or siddhi. And that was his teaching to his sons, to not chase after those things, but rather to pursue the topmost stage of life that's even beyond dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. That which is what's beyond moksha. What's beyond moksha is devotional service. So although Rishabhdev showed detachment, it wasn't the false kind of detachment that, oh, I'll give this up, I'll give that up, I'll give the other thing up, just see how detached I am. It wasn't that kind of detachment. It was complete absorption in the mood, showing by example attachment to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who he was. It wasn't just self-absorbed, but showing by example. to his sons and to the world. That was his teaching, and he showed by example. He gave the teaching, and he showed by example. So the Bhagavatam, as Rishabhdev is teaching, the Bhagavatam is teaching us that there's, Prabhupada called it the fifth stage. The four, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, but beyond. What's beyond moksha? Devotional service. Pure devotional service that's not mixed with karma and gyan, or the hope for material enjoyment or liberation. Devotional service that's devoid of those expectations, or pursuing them as an objective or goal. And we've been discussing this. The platform of devotional service begins from the platform of liberation. Brahmabhutta prasanatma nasochati nakangsati. And the verse from the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is describing one who is absorbed in mind upon the personality of Godhead, experiences that relationship. They experience the spiritual world, and they feel there's no greater gain than this. They don't have an attraction for something else. So Bhagavad Gita teaches, Rishabhdev teaches, and now, in a very personal way, the speaker, Shukadev Goswami, is expressing the glory of devotional service, but he's also pacifying the mind of Maharaj Parikshit. Because in the course of his descriptions, he said this, that the family of Priyavrata is the most glorious of families. And Prabhupada described Priyavrata, in his line appeared Rishabhdev. And in the line of Uttanapada appeared Prithu Maharaj. In the line of the Yadu dynasty appeared Krishna. In the line of the Raghu or Ikshvaku dynasty appeared Ramachandra. So he said those things. So Maharaj Parikshit may be feeling, I'm less fortunate because Krishna didn't appear in our family line. He appeared in the Yadu dynasty, not in the Kuru dynasty. And he was of the Kuru dynasty. Wasn't like sad, oh. But appreciating less fortunate, thinking like that. So to encourage, simultaneously to encourage Maharaj Parikshit, but also to instruct about the glorious position of devotional service and the levels of good fortune in devotional service. So devotional service is more fortunate position than liberation, because devotional service begins from the platform of liberation. It's more than liberation. Bhakti, we may be in the modes of nature, but bhakti is not in the modes of nature. Bhakti is pure, shuddha. It's by nature, it's pure. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnanakarmajnavritam anukulyena krishna anushilanam bhaktir uttama. Bhakti means pure devotion. There is such a thing as mixed devotion. Look around. Mixed devotion. And Kapila Dev instructs. There's a whole chapter in the Bhagavatam, third canto, that describes devotional service that's mixed. But that's, the consciousness is mixed. Devotional service is pure, and devotional service lifts our impure consciousness to the position of pure consciousness. If we just surrender, that little thing called surrender, just surrender, and you'll be lifted out of the contamination. There is something that we have to do. We surrender. And that means let go of the contamination and accept purity in our lives. Strive for that, accepting that shelter. receiving that shelter. So, devotional service is above or beyond the platform of liberation. That's been established. Now there are degrees of intimacy within the realm of devotional service. One of those intimacies is that Krishna appears in the Yadu dynasty. That's intimate. Vasudeva and Devaki being the father and the mother of God. That's beyond liberation. It's an intimate exchange of love. And therefore the Yadu dynasty to this day is glorified in song and in verse and in prayers. They're certainly on the platform of pure devotional service. So how do you make a comparison between pure devotional service and pure devotional service? In the language of nectar of devotion, there's perfect, more perfect, and most perfect. They're all perfect. So of this position of devotional service, that's the platform of perfection. And that Krishna appears in the family of such a devotee, that's so exalted. More perfect. And above that, according to what Shukadev Goswami, on his authority, he's saying that even more glorious and fortunate is, although Krishna didn't appear in your family, there is an intimacy between you, Pandavas, and your grandfathers, and therefore your family, the Pandava dynasty, than the Yadu dynasty. And that's because of the intimacy of loving exchange. Mentioned in the verse is, he is your spiritual master, worshipable deity, friend, and the director of your activities. To say nothing of this, he sometimes serves your family as a messenger or servant. This means he worked just as ordinary servants do. So Krishna took the subordinate position. He took the friend position. He took the superior position. He took so many positions. Simply because of his affection. Whatever suited the situation, Krishna took it. He even broke his own word. He who doesn't break his word, broke his word. And part of that was to reciprocate with the affection of Bhishma Dev. He broke his word. Such love that Krishna has for the Pandavas. And therefore, when in the first canto, when the questions of the sages of Naimisharanya have been answered, that the highest perfection of life, as expressed within the Vedas, is to engage in devotional service, and that devotional service is made up of hearing and chanting topics about Krishna, the sages are revved up. They're seated on the edge of their straw mats, and they're saying, Krishna Katha, please. Beginning of the seventh chapter. So, to oblige them, Suta Goswami speaks Krishna Katha by speaking about the Pandavas. And Prabhupada asks the question. They wanted Krishna Katha, and he's speaking about the Pandavas. Why this? And then he answers the question, because speaking about the Pandavas is Krishna Katha. Because of their intimate relationship with Krishna. In relation to Krishna, speaking of the Pandavas is speaking of Krishna. How can you think of the Pandavas minus Krishna? Or think of Krishna minus the Pandavas. There, whenever Krishna appears in his Bhoma Leela, his earthly pastime, they're there. They may not be named by those same five names, and may not have those same forms and father and all of that, but they're always with Krishna. When Krishna left, they left. When Krishna came, they came. When Krishna went here, they went here. When Krishna went there, they went there. They're intimately united with Krishna. Of course, they didn't participate in the Vrindavan pastimes, the first 12 years of Krishna's life, because that's Braja Prema is in another category. They're even more fortunate. And that's disclosed in very nicely in Brihat Bhagavatamrita. But I thought, to embellish this, I'll read three verses from Brihat Bhagavatamrita, where Sanatan Goswami is describing the same thing that Shukadeva Goswami is describing in this verse. And he's doing it by having Hanuman describe to Narada the very special position of the Pandavas. Because Narada is in search for who is the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy. So a series of things happens and he goes to Hanuman. After going to Prahlad Maharaj, he thinks Prahlad Maharaj, who can be a recipient of the Supreme Lord's mercy like Prahlad? Even still within the womb of his mother, the Supreme Lord protected him through Narada and instructed him Srimad Bhagavatam, and became a realized soul before he even did anything. And the Lord came to protect him. In the greatest of difficult situations, the Lord personally protected him. And then he appeared, destroyed Hiranyakashipu. And all the demigods couldn't pacify, but little Prahlad could. Who's a recipient of mercy like that? But Prahlad says, no. I just remember him, but I don't get to do practical service. The one who gets to do practical service, that's Hanuman. He's constantly engaged in Lord's service. Go see Hanuman if you want to see who's the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy. So Narada goes to Hanuman and glorifies Hanuman's service. And Hanuman goes, no, 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 no. Don't say like that. Lord Ramachandra, he's my life and soul. And when he returned to Ayodhya, he left me behind. He took us all, his other 60,000 associates, to Ayodhya, to the spiritual world, and he left me here. Don't say I'm a recipient of the Lord's mercy. I just have to cry and remember his pastimes and speak his glories and somehow pacify my heart. The greatest, however, recipient of the Lord's mercy is not just they do some service, but the intimacy with the Pandavas. The Lord takes the position of being their servant. How intimate! He puts them, the first verse he describes, he puts them, by his own arrangement, he puts them in great difficulty that no one can survive. And they survive. And then he comes and fixes the problem. He takes away the calamity, just like that. How intimate are the Pandavas? And then he describes, he acted as their servant, their advisor, their messenger, charioteer and court attendant. He kept watch for them at night. He followed them on processions and even offered them praises and obeisances. Here's Sanatan Goswami's purport from Brihat Bhagavatamrita. Not only did Lord Krishna look after the Pandavas as the invisible supersoul, but he also dealt with them in various public exchanges of love. Sometimes he drove Arjuna's chariot. In Yudhisthira's court, he sat at the head of the assembly of advisors. So here's the king, and here's the minister of the king. I'm ready to give you advice whenever you call upon me. It's a servant or assistant to the king. Because he was of the royal family, just like Vasudev, he was part of the royal family, but he had a very specific function. He wasn't the king, but he was offering advice to the king. He was expert at giving advice. And so for using that expertise, he was able to pacify Kamsa. He gave him counsel so that Kamsa wouldn't get himself in a big problem, but would still fulfill his purposes to kill the child of Devaki without getting a bad name for himself and spoiling his pious activities. Like an intimate servant, he anticipated the Pandavas' wishes. Prabhupada described there are different categories of servant. One is an obedient servant. They're told, they do. Then another one is because they know the routine of the person that they're serving, they regularly do without being told, because they know this is part of the requirement of service. And there's even a more intimate kind of service where the servant knows the master so well, they anticipate something that's not regular, but just they know the heart of their master. And even before the request is made or the thought is expressed, the service is carried out. That's unusual. But that's Krishna. He knew the heart of the Pandavas, and therefore even before they're expressing some need, the need was taken care of. And as an advisor, the example that's given here is the Rajasuya Yajna. They turned to Krishna. How to do the Rajasuya Yajna? Krishna explained how to do the Rajasuya Yajna. And Krishna even assigned various duties for the Rajasuya Yajna. And Krishna assigned himself for one of those services in the Rajasuya Yajna. And his service was, he sat at the door and washed everybody's feet that entered. Very humble position. To serve in a menial position, the exalted Maharaj Yudhisthira. He gave personal counsel to Yudhisthira and carried messages for him. The famous message is the peace message. Just a messenger. Commonly, the kings would dispatch someone as a messenger. And there's laws or codes of conduct on how a messenger should be treated. If the messenger is bringing some unpleasant news, you don't mistreat the messenger because he's the bearer of unpleasant news. You treat him respectfully. It's just a code of conduct. So Krishna was bringing this message of peace. Of course, it was rejected by Duryodhana. But he took the humble position of a servant. And on occasion, he would stand guard all night with sword in hand. There was a circumstance where the Pandavas were in hiding, in exile, and Krishna had joined them, and there was some risk that the Kauravas might come and find them. So Krishna said, you all take rest. I'll stand up at the gate, guarding you all night with sword in hand. And they didn't want to say yes to have Krishna serve them. But they knew that Krishna wanted to serve them, so they said yes, as part of their service to Krishna, because Krishna wanted intimacy, not ordinary. Vamana did similar with Bali Maharaj. He said, just see how glorious is Bali. Even I put him in a disgraceful situation. He never protested. He simply wanted to do whatever would be pleasing to me. His affection for me, I just wanted to show the world. And therefore, my affection for him is not only I'll give him a kingdom to replace the kingdom he surrendered to me, but I'll stand at the gate and not let any improper person enter. In Valmiki's Ramayana, it said that when Ravana was conquering in all directions, higher planets, medium planets, and the lower planets, one place he couldn't enter was the kingdom of Bali Maharaj. Because with the same foot that Vamana placed upon the head of Bali Maharaj, he kicked Ravana and he went flying into some other planetary system. So Ravana couldn't enter. Vamana became the gatekeeper of Bali Maharaj. And similarly, Krishna became the night watchman with sword in hand. He doesn't need sword in hand. Doesn't need to watch anything. But he took that service out of intimacy, of love. And he would follow Yudhisthira in procession and offer words of praise like an ordinary subordinate. When part of the entourage of kings is, they would keep, what the English word is, I don't know what it is in Sanskrit, they would keep bards. So when it's time to wake up in the morning, the bards, B-A-R-D-S, they would come and sing the glories of the king, so he would wake up hearing about his own glories. Ah, yes, I'm so glorious. And then on public occasions, the bards would sing the glories of the king, and the populace would be entertained and appreciate, yes. So they were very expert. Not in one sense, in a mundane sense, it's flattery, but it's proper for one who is so glorious as a king that they're glorified. So in the procession, when Maharaj Yudhisthira was on procession for the Rajasuya Yajna, Krishna was behind him along with the other bards and singing the praises of Maharaj Yudhisthira like an ordinary servant of the king. And he liked that position. Krishna came and bowed before Maharaj Yudhisthira at the time of his coronation. He liked. Now, one might think, wouldn't that really make Yudhisthira Maharaj uncomfortable? Because he knows that Krishna is the personality of God, and how can Krishna come and pay his obeisances and sing my praises and wash people's feet? The intimacy was such that he accepted those positions because he knew it was pleasing to Krishna. That's all. It's like the gopis offing the dust from their feet to remove Krishna's headache. Whatever. Because it's for Krishna. And Krishna, the intimacy with the Pandavas was such that their love for him was so strong that they wouldn't say no, and they wouldn't take it as, oh, I'm so such an important person that Krishna is singing my praises. No false ego, only service. We had this discussion the other day about what to do when you do some service nicely, and then this difficult thing comes that people start appreciating your service done nicely. And then, just because we're conditioned souls, one becomes proud. Or the other way, you do some service nicely, someone else gets praised and you don't get praised. That's another thing that happens sometimes. I hear about it.
No one appreciates me.
It's either what's wrong with me or what's wrong with them or something like that. But for the Pandavas, there's no ego. It's only one thing. It's Krishna's service. And it's so intimate. Like the South Indian Brahmin story in Chaitanya Charitamrita, just reading the illiterate Brahmin trying to read Bhagavad Gita, but because he was illiterate, couldn't read Bhagavad Gita, but he was crying every time he saw the picture of Krishna taking the position of the chariot driver of Arjuna. He's the Supreme Lord. But he's so kind upon his devotee, Arjuna, that he becomes the chariot driver. And Arjuna is so affectionate to Krishna, Duryodhan, take all of Krishna's armies. I'll just have Krishna on my side. It's fine with me if he doesn't fight. There's no calculation about win-lose. It's just be the servant of Krishna. That's all. And Krishna's so kind that when Arjuna is put into difficulty, all the whole thing orchestrated by Krishna so that Arjuna would be put in difficulty, Krishna breaks his vow that he wouldn't fight. And he takes up the chariot wheel of Arjuna to smash Bhishma, simply to reciprocate with Bhishma's chivalrous rasa. And Bhishma drops his weapons. Ah. Just see Krishna. He has such love for his devotee, he'll break his vow. He wanted to see Krishna do like that. And Krishna did like that, because his devotee wanted him to do like that. And he orchestrated the whole event so he could do like that. And broke Bhishma's vow that he would kill the Pandavas the next morning with the five arrows. He broke Bhishma's vow so that Bhishma would do this. I'll make Krishna break his vow. And he did. Such intimacy. Here's material enjoyment. Here's mystic cities. Here's liberation. And then there's devotional service. And then there's intimate devotional service. And then there's more intimate devotional service. And then there's and it's way beyond liberation. That's the message that we're hearing in the Bhagavatam. And something that we've heard before, the Supreme Personality of Godhead easily gives one liberation. Now, people strive for liberation for lifetimes through great austerities and so much tribulation to get liberation, and they may not get it. And here it's saying it easily gives liberation. So comparatively, devotional service, it's above liberation, and yet we're being engaged in devotional service. Our fortune is, we're not properly conceiving what fortune we have. One devotee who I have great admiration for, appreciation for their devotional service. They've been practicing Krishna consciousness, initiated devotees, practicing Krishna consciousness for a dozen years or more. And they just shared with me this realization that the opportunity I'm appreciating more than ever before, the opportunity to engage in devotional service is so special. We're something like little children. No offense if there's some little children in the audience, but we're like little children where we receive something. Little children receive something from their parents. They don't have any sense of what's behind that something. How much sacrifice the parents are making to make all arrangement for their children. The children are just taking, receiving. Maybe they learn to say thank you. Maybe. But not really understanding that which they've received. We're like that. Little selfish brats. Excuse me. Where we're just immature in devotional life. We're immature. We don't really understand what it is that we've been given. The great fortune that we've been given. But if our devotional service grows, if we apply the process of bhakti conscientiously, sincerely, carefully, we start to appreciate more and more and more. What good fortune it is that we've been given. Where's Bindu Madhava? Today is your birthday? Today is Bindu Madhava's birthday? So I was thinking about Bindu Madhava. Who was Bindu Madhava in his last lifetime? I was thinking to ask you, do you have any idea who you were in your last lifetime? No idea. But one thing we know, you were a devotee. And we know that on the strength of scripture, that you were a devotee, and that you somehow didn't complete your practice of bhakti. Krishna describes a few options. One can go to the heavenly planets and enjoy for a long time and come back and take birth again and continue. Or one can take birth in a Suchinam Srimatam Gehe, a family of brahmanas or wealthy mercantile family, and have nice opportunity to continue devotional service. Even greater is what's happened in your life. You've taken birth in a family of devotees. And you're doing things that the rest of us, you know, we were many years older before we even came in contact with Krishna consciousness. So don't take birth again. Finish your business. And you guys too. Finish your business. And us too. Finish our business. Finish your business. This life. This life. That means so conscientiously take up this glorious message. Appreciate what it is. Take it into your heart and let it just carry you to the spiritual world. That's what the Bhagavatam wants to give us, our clear path back home, back to Godhead. How many times we've heard it, but we're just so immature we don't, like, receive it. Kind of, oh yeah, I've heard that one, what else is there? Such a special opportunity to be engaged in devotional service. And progressively, as our consciousness becomes more fixed on what the essence of devotional service is, as we're engaging in devotional service, the circumstances of life, the dualities that harass us, and our own stuff, meaning kam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsarja, it can be conquered by devotion, and otherwise it's an endless struggle. Go for pure devotional service. Strive for that. That pure devotional service, unmixed with anything. Strive for that by this process of ardent hearing. Nice adjective. Very intent hearing. Ardent hearing. Very careful. So that we receive the fullness of the mercy that's being extended to us through this Bhagavatam. We can really appreciate and value the devotional service opportunity that we have. Just like today, honoring the disappearance of Srila Prabhupada. Very special. So I was thinking before coming down for the morning class, should I speak something just about Srila Prabhupada and his appearance day, disappearance day? I thought, Prabhupada came to give us this. And I'll speak on a verse that will help you understand how important this is. This is the boat that Prabhupada left behind to get to the other side of material existence. Here it is. Srimad Bhagavatam, the boat to cross the ocean of material existence. I'll speak about it later. Here it is. Take it. And don't just like leave it on your shelf. Bring it into your heart. Take the message to heart. Hear it in that manner. Receive that gift that Prabhupada wanted to carry you beyond your shortcomings and limitations and impurities and all that stuff to the realm of pure devotional service, where one is intimately engaged in serving Krishna lovingly. So we're hearing about the Pandavas. And in the family of the Pandavas, Maharaj Parikshit, who also intimately served the Supreme Lord. And in our disciplic line, persons who intimately served the Supreme Lord. And we're part of that family, spiritual family. How fortunate. What did we do? We just happened to be in the right place at the right time and said yes instead of no. How did it happen? That just the merciful nature of the Vaishnavas. So the immature is, okay, we're saying yes, but half-heartedly yes, and partly we're also saying I want to hang on to my stuff. It's very dear to me, my stuff. Meaning my contaminations. Let go. Take shelter. This message is very effective. It's very powerful. Very sublime. Take you to the lotus feet of Krishna as fast as you're ready to go. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. It's 9:24. So we're fasting this morning, right? So, any questions? Bindu Madhava's birthday question. How can we constantly be engaged in Krishna's service? Well, we are, because that's our constitutional position. But just modify it and say favorably instead of unfavorably. Constantly favorably by association with Srila Prabhupada and his sublime teachings and his faithful followers. Stay in close association with Prabhupada's teachings and his faithful followers who are living those instructions, and you'll be nicely engaged. Nicely engaged. Constantly in devotional service. When you're in the association of the devotees, be very careful to avoid offending those devotees, because that can destroy your position of engagement in devotional service. How do we know that we have finished our business in this life? You have to wait for that moment. You'll know. And even during the course of this embodiment, where there's no more attraction for objects that appear to be enjoyable objects. And until that position comes, then you have some business to do. That's the cleansing business, the purification business. Who wrote Brihat Bhagavatamrita? It was written by Sanatan Goswami. And after he wrote Brihat Bhagavatamrita, he wrote a commentary on Brihat Bhagavatamrita. Is there a difference between Brihat Bhagavatamrita and Srimad Bhagavatam? Yes, one is the book and the other is a commentary on the book. That's the difference. But it's a very unique commentary. It's not just a commentary on the Bhagavatam. It's a commentary on the Bhagavatam that's simultaneously a very unique commentary on Mahabharata. That's unique. Anything else? Yes?
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, when we hear like sentences like finish your business in this lifetime, so after hearing these kinds of sentences, like some enthusiasm comes. But at the same time, like sometimes when we hear like each anartha will take at least 5 years, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says like that. So like some enthusiasm goes down, Maharaj, like in this lifetime I cannot make it, at the same time so many contaminations are there. So Maharaj, how can we maintain the enthusiasm on the same pace after seeing our contamination?
How to maintain enthusiasm when you're hearing what looks like to me it's not contradictory at all. It's not like one is enthusing and the other is discouraging. If there's some insidious contamination of heart that you can get rid of, that I feel I can get rid of in 5 years, whew, I'm going for it. I shared this the other day, but Giriraj Maharaj said that one time he was in Prabhupada's quarters in Bombay on the fifth floor of one of the tower where Prabhupada's quarters were, early in the morning, and they were chanting, just the two of them chanting japa together. And Prabhupada stopped chanting. And he spoke to Giriraj Maharaj and said, in a very grave tone, early in the morning, it took me 30 years to perfect chanting. So Giriraj Maharaj was thinking, wow, 30 years. And now that he's been chanting for 40-something years, he's thinking, wow, if only in this lifetime I can perfect my chanting. Similarly, it's encouraging. Some insidious, obstinate, really tough to get rid of thing is in the heart, and if properly followed, it's gone. 5 years. Phew. Yay! It's gone. Not partly gone. It's gone. Think of one of your favorite problems. And if you follow properly in 5 years, it's gone. Yay! Gone. Never to knock on your door again. What to speak of mess up your life? It's just gone. Yay! Right? Respect is the antidote for familiarity, but somehow the mind hovers over subtle behaviors of devotees when I stay with them for a long period of time. Familiarity. Though verbally there may be no offense, but mentally it is, what to do? Respect, that's the answer. Just cultivate respect. And then you offer the, yeah, but. Just get rid of the yeah, buts and just offer respect. Cultivate respect. Why did Bhishma ask for the boon when he wants it to be broken? And when he knows that Lord Krishna would protect Arjuna? Who wrote this one? Because I want clarification. You wrote this one? Let me ask what you're asking. Ask back what you're asking. You wrote, why did Bhishma ask for the boon? Which boon are you referring to? The boon of being able to break Krishna's promise? More volume? Give her the microphone. Here it comes. Bhakta Mike is coming to help you.
He took a boon that he can kill Pandavas. So, why did he ask for that boon?
To kill the Pandavas. He didn't need a boon to kill the Pandavas. He was powerful. You know, when Bhishma was fighting with Parashuram couldn't defeat Bhishma. You know that, right? Parashuram was the spiritual master of Bhishma. So when Bhishma was unwilling to marry Ambalika went crying, "Oh, Parashuram, you won't marry me, and no one will marry me. Please do something." So Parashuram confronted Bhishma and said, either you marry her, because she has no one to marry now because of the various reasons, or you have to fight me. You're aware of this from Mahabharata? No? So Bhishma Dev said, you're my guru. But one may reject an instruction from the guru on three grounds. And he states those grounds. And one is, if the guru asks the disciple to violate the codes of Dharma, explicit codes of Dharma, he can refrain from doing that. So I've taken a vow that I'll not marry. And you're asking me to break my vow to marry. So let's fight. And I'll suggest that we have our fight at Kurukshetra, because then in an auspicious way, when you lose, you'll attain a higher destination. Bhishma, if Parashuram says, I'll meet you there. Let's go. So they fought for some long number of days, and Parashuram was unable to defeat Bhishma. Parashuram. Some personalities, I forget which the personalities were, that visited Parashuram and said, you're not going to be able to defeat him. He won't be able to defeat you, but you won't be able to defeat him. Because he's a special descendant of Vayu. You won't be able to defeat him. So, the next morning, Parashuram put down his weapons. Bhishma Dev fell at his feet. You're my spiritual master. I accept you in that way. So Bhishma Dev was practically invincible. So Bhishma Dev didn't need some benediction that he could kill the Pandavas. He was holding back from killing the Pandavas because of his affection for the Pandavas. And Duryodhana brought that to us. You're our general. You've taken this position of general and you're holding back. Like kicking him in the shins and saying, you know, fight. And so Bhishma Dev says, very well. See these five arrows? You know the story? Here are these five arrows. You hold them at night. Give them to me in the morning, and with these five arrows, I'll kill the five Pandavas. Duryodhana said, very good. Thank you, Grandfather Bhishma. And he left with the arrows in hand. Krishna, being omniscient, knew about that exchange. So he called Arjuna. Arjuna, do you remember when you helped Duryodhana in a time of difficulty? You saved his life. And he gave you a promise, which was, whatever it is that you want, you just ask and it's yours. Arjuna said, I don't need anything, maybe someday later. You remember that, Arjuna? Go to Duryodhana's tent and now ask him, remind him of that event and ask him for the fulfillment of a benediction. When he says yes, because he's religious, at least in that kind of religious, you ask him for five arrows. He'll know. So Arjuna asked for the five arrows. So in the morning, when Duryodhana went to greet Grandfather Bhishma, because that was the system, the elders were greeted, Bhishma said, where are the five arrows? And Duryodhana said, well, I don't have them anymore. What happened? And he said, what happened? Arjuna came and asked for the five arrows. And because I had given my promise, I can't break my promise, so I gave him the five arrows. So Bhishma said, I who never break my vow, I've taken a vow, and now my vow is broken because of Krishna's trickery. I'll make Krishna break his vow. Here's how I'm going to do it. I take another vow. Before the sun sets tonight, either Krishna breaks his vow or I'll kill Arjuna. Yay! Duryodhana was very happy. If not all five Pandavas, at least Arjuna. So Bhishma Dev fought so valiantly against Arjuna that he was nearly finished. His chariot was broken and Bhishma was firing arrows and Krishna was standing in between Arjuna and Bhishma to catch the arrows in his chest. Arjuna felt terrible. Krishna, you're taking the arrows meant for me in your chest and there's blood all over your chest. This is awful. Krishna was happy to serve Arjuna and to reciprocate with Bhishma because it was part of Bhishma's love to see that Krishna will protect his devotee. And then just before the sun set, because the fighting ends at sunset, Bhishma Dev put the last intense burst of effort to destroy Arjuna. So Krishna picked up Arjuna's chariot wheel and started charging at him with the chariot, broken chariot wheel over his head like Sudarshan Chakra ready to smash Bhishma. Bhishma dropped his arrows in his bow and then the conch sounded. It was the end of the day. So Krishna didn't smash Bhishma. Bhishma vow was broken. He didn't kill Arjuna, but the other part was kept. Krishna broke his promise. And Bhishma just wanted to see, to show the world that above Krishna's promise is his love for his devotees. He'll break his promise to protect his devotees because that's more important to him than any religious principle. Krishna's love for his devotee is greater. That's what Bhishma wanted, and Krishna did. So the boon was the affection. He knew what Krishna would do, and Krishna did, out of reciprocation of his love for Bhishma, and at the same time Arjuna, who were on opposite sides. Everyone was happy. Krishna's expert. Even his two saris, everyone's happy. That's a tough job. Okay?
Thank you so much.
Okay. Hare Krishna. For a person who is not in association of devotees, how can he or she become advanced in Krishna consciousness when Maya is acting upon him or her? What is the ultimate root to practice Krishna consciousness constantly? Well, you can associate through sound and between the personal or physical and sound is more important. So practice regularly hearing, and especially with the facilities of modern technology, you can just abundant opportunity for hearing. And if you hear in the right mood, that's association. As I shared with the other devotees sometime while I was here, for those who are disciples of Srila Prabhupada, he left this world in 1977. Just here we are, is honoring his disappearance day. So do the math, 1977 November and 2011. 34 years without physical association. How are we able to maintain our vitality in Krishna consciousness without any association with our spiritual master for 34 years? It's through sound vibration when properly received. And then that relationship is not distant, but vibrant. It's vital. By proper hearing, that's how. And that's how you can associate even from a remote place. And another is, you preach Krishna consciousness and you make devotees and then you have devotee association. And it's not just a joke. It's how it works. It's how Prabhupada sent people to all kinds of distant places, and by empowerment and their sincere efforts, they created devotees. Then they had association. If that's the circumstance, then do that. Okay, I think I'm going to end. It's 9:45, and our next program is coming. Thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.